Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 11th, 2021. Today, we are happy to have back with us our co-host, our educator, our author, all-around wise person, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ted?
Good. Thanks for coming, for being back with us.
Good to be back.
That's great. Well, the circumstances that we are meeting in are not the greatest. What we want to discuss is this IPCC UN report that is tearing up the headlines, or at least for the beginning of this week will tear up the headlines before it sinks below the waterline again. But, dear listener, what has happened is that as part of that now decades-long United Nations process that began in Rio de Janeiro in 1992, the scientists have been issuing reports every 5 years. The process brings us to what's called the assessment report number 6. So this is the 6th report since 1990. I guess that means it's about every 5 years the report comes out. And what happens is that a whole bunch of really smart scientists get together and they look at all of the scientific literature. They don't do any experiments or anything like that. They look at other people's results and they do some modeling and they look and they think about what all those results mean. And they put it together in their head and try and figure out what are the implications. And recently, just this week, the report from the United Nations on the physical science underlying climate change, what we know about it now, the best thing we know about it now, was released. And this is the assessment report number 6. It's also called the IPCC report. It's 1,300 pages long. I doubt very many people will read all that 1,300 pages. But the report is pretty sobering, right, Mariah? Did you see anything on that report?
Yeah, my goodness, of course. I think what did the United Nations Secretary General declared it a code red, right? That was the big word that's being associated with this. And I don't know about you, but a code red doesn't sound good to me. stop what you're doing and start, you know, addressing this, right? Basically, that, you know, we're headed towards at least 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, which, you know, I think to put that in context, it's sort of like, well, 1.5 degrees Celsius doesn't sound like a lot, but if you picture having a fever, right? So, you know, 1.5 puts you at what? Is it 100? Like, right, 100.1, right? Like, you're not comfortable at 100.1 fever. So, and, you know, I'm borrowing that from Catherine Hayhoe, who often compares the temperature rise to having the planet having a fever. So, you know, that's guaranteed, I think, at this point. I think that's one of the big things from the report. And that's not good. That means a lot of, we'll talk about this, of course, in more detail, but, you know, the low-lying Pacific Island nations, like, they can't survive. Right. If it's at 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. So,
I mean, one of the hallmarks of this report is that it is much more definitive, if you can get much more definitive. And dear listener, you probably remember that the United Nations IPCC has well-defined language around probabilities, right? There's highly likely, likely, medium confidence. All of those words are well-defined. The utmost one is unequivocal, right? Which means not equal voices, right? There's only one voice, and then that one voice is saying that the problem is real and now. The scientists in this report are saying it's unequivocal that humans are the cause. I mean, you can't get any more certainty out of a scientific review than that.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, I mean, that's, we'll start diving in, right? That's point A1, but I think that's a really important finding because, you know, the science community, there's a lot of uncertainty that has to be part of science. It's just built into it, right? You can only say something with 95% confidence. That's part of the process of science, is to always say, we're not 100% about this, because you can't be, right? There can always be an outlier. And I think some of that uncertainty over the past decades has been what deniers have pounced on. They've really capitalized on that as like as wiggle room for whether mm-hmm. climate change is real or not. And so to have this report, again, it's a metadata report, right? This is a whole bunch of scientists looking at a whole bunch, like thousands of other peer-reviewed scientific papers, and saying, here are the commonalities. And for their very first bullet point to be, it is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the planet, is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just to follow up on the point, I mean, the words uncertainty mean different things to the layman and to the scientist. And for the scientist, uncertainty is a mathematically computable number, right? That says, that tells you with some probability, are you, you know, is the correct answer in the range that you lay out, right? So the scientist says uncertainty. Sometimes they call it error, the error on my measurement. And the people who are taking advantage and cherry picking facts will say, oh, you're uncertain, right? That must mean you don't know what you're talking about, which is exactly the opposite of the implication. And if anything, the uncertainty or the margin of error on the conclusions the scientists have made, what keeps surprising us is the stuff comes sooner rather than later. Yeah. If they say, we predict it's going to be 50 years, but it might be in 20 years, it might be in 80 years. Well, it turns out it's in 20 years, right? It's coming in earlier. So the whole question of the language that the scientists use, and we'll see in a minute, but unequivocal is pretty definitive, right? You don't get much more certain than that. Mariah, what I thought we would do, because the report is so big and so inclusive and covers so much ground, and the fact that so few people will actually ever get to read it, right, that the maybe what we ought to do is go to what are called the headlines. So there's a two-page document, right, that is put out by this panel that contains sort of headline, bulleted, top-level conclusions that they want you to know. And what I thought we would do is read through them and basically try to take some of the jargon out and say, what do they mean by that? Okay. And we'll have other people reading the actual bullet points, and then Mariah and I will jump back in and try and explain what those bullet points mean. Okay. And so there you go.
Sounds fun. It is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, ocean, and land. Widespread and rapid changes in the atmosphere, ocean, cyrosphere, and biosphere have occurred.
So there you go. There is the famous unequivocal word. Unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere. Right? To my mind, that means it's no doubt it's humans. Right, Mariah? Would you agree?
Right. Yep. It's anthropogenic, caused by humans. There's no question that we have warmed the atmosphere. The scientists all agree that the Earth has a fever, as we kind of mentioned before.
We're done. We're done with that part, right? If they're talking in the past tense here, that has warmed, and the biosphere has occurred. Okay, so the first bullet point is that it's not some future thing. It's happening now, okay? And it's humans have made it happen. Okay, let's go on to the second bullet
point. Two. The scale of recent changes across the climate system as a whole and the present state of many aspects of the climate system are unprecedented over many centuries to many thousands of years.
Mariah, so tell me.
Yes. I mean, so, you know, I think that's one of sometimes you hear the pushback of like, it's a natural cycle. Like, this is just how the Earth happens. But scientists have been studying ice cores and peat moss, and you know, there's the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii where Charles David Keeling created the Keeling curve tracking carbon dioxide, and all of these things we have never seen this before. So I mean, you know, I think in that, that's sort of in some ways maybe the background of how we know that it's human, unquestionably that it's human influence or anthropogenic, as they say. And you know, the ice cores take us back, I think, what is it, thousands
800,000 years. Yeah, you
can go way, way back in those ice cores, and you study, you know, the little air bubbles that are in the ice core, and that tells you what the composition of the gases were in the air, and we haven't seen it like this. It's
right. I mean, these the things that are happening now are unprecedented, right? They're new. Okay, so there you go. It's us, right? This is new stuff. So the third bullet point is
A3. Human-induced climate change is already affecting many weather and climate extremes in every region across the globe. Evidence of observed changes in extremes such as heat waves, heavy precipitation, droughts, and tropical cyclones, and in particular, their attribution to human influence, has strengthened since the fifth assessment report.
All right, Mara, I want to grab that one. What it's saying is that we're already seeing the effects of climate change in the extremes. And can I point you at all the wildfires out in California, right? I mean, these things are in the huge heat wave that we just had, the 115 degrees in Canada, right? These
in
extremes.
Oregon.
Yeah. I mean, these things are happening now. And what I find, so, I mean, this headline, what it's telling you is that we're already seeing the climate extremes that are predicted. They're happening now. And what I find really interesting is that this reference to the attribution to human influence. Right? So for a long time, climate activists always say that, you know, no single weather event can be attributed to climate change, blah, blah, blah. It turns out that scientists have gotten so much better that they can now say the extent to which global warming affects a heat wave. Right? And they can say, well, there's one chance in a million that this heat wave would have happened in the absence of climate change, right? So the human attribution aspect to particular kinds of weather events is a new thing that's happened in the last few years. Does that make sense?
And I think, unfortunately, the reason that they can more directly attribute it is because the extremes are getting so extreme, right? So it's a lot easier to say, well, it's climate change when you're saying, like, okay, this is like very, very different. We, you know, Oregon has never had 100, I mean, very infrequently had 116 degree temperature, you know, during the summer. And the 1,000-year floods that are supposed to happen I guess 100-year flood might be a better example, right? 100-year floods that are supposed to happen every 100 years, and all of a sudden they're happening every 5 years. Like, that is, you know, you can start to say the scientists have, of course, pathways and formats for doing this, but you can start to say this is an irregular pattern in something that used to be very cyclical and predictable.
Right. Okay, so here's the next one.
A4. Improved knowledge of climate processes, paleoclimate evidence, and the response of the climate system to increasing radiative forcing gives a best estimate of equilibrium climate sensitivity of 3 degrees Celsius with a narrower range compared to AR5.
So can I, let me go with that. That's really geeky, right? We're talking about equilibrium climate sensitivity of 3 degrees. What does that mean? Equilibrium climate sensitivity is this number that the scientists have invented, and they say, if you double the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and then wait 10,000 years for all of the systems to come back to equilibrium, what is the difference in the temperature of the Earth, right? And what they're saying, if you double the carbon dioxide and wait an extremely long time for everything to settle out, the temperature would rise by 3 degrees, and the error on that 3 degrees is narrower. They more precisely know that it would be about 3 degrees. And there's both good news and bad news in that particular reference, because two things can happen. The bad news is that because the error rate, the uncertainty is narrower, it means the possibility that climate change might not be so bad goes away because you're more confident that the sensitivity is not half a degree, right? You know it's 3 degrees, right? So that's the bad news. The good news is that, gee, is that 3 degrees narrows, you say 3 degrees pretty well, pretty close to 3 degrees. It means that the sensitivity is not some hellscape of a 5 degree, you know, a much more sensitive response. So this 3 degree number is what it is. It's both good and bad news, but that's the climate sensitivity argument. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I would imagine it's something that people would use to plan more resilience and mitigation efforts, right? Which is of course not what we want to do. We want to, resilience and adaptation efforts, which of course we want to mitigate, but
right.
It at least gives you like a helpful starting point in some way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's go on. Now they have a second set of headlines. Let's hear what the headline B1 is.
Possible climate futures. Global surface temperature will continue to increase until at least the mid-century under all emission scenarios considered. Global warming of 1.5 degrees centigrade and 2 degrees centigrade will be exceeded during the 21st century unless deep reductions in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions occur in the coming decades.
Oh, yeah. So tell me, what does that one mean?
I mean, that's kind of the, to me, in some sense, it's sort of one of the most depressing bullet points, right? I mean, basically, we can't do a whole lot to change our trajectory. And that makes me nervous for a lot of ways, because there's a lot of positive feedback mechanisms that are not accounted for in some of the predictions and trajectories, like the melting of the permafrost, mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. And so, you know, the fact that we are now guaranteed we're guaranteed to warm between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius means that a lot of people are going to suffer, and that a lot of people are going to be displaced from their home at best.
Right.
You know?
I mean, the way I read it says that no matter what we do, we're going to keep heating the planet until the year 2050. I mean, we've already baked that in. And that unless there's extreme cuts in carbon dioxide, we're going to hit that 1.5 and in fact 2 degrees centigrade this century. I mean, it's very small window to do the right thing here.
Right? Yeah. Aren't we already at 1.2 degrees Celsius?
Pre-industrial. Yes. Right, pre-industrial times. So there you go. The will continue to increase until at least the mid-century. This is all very depressing stuff, dear listener. And it is, we hope to talk our way through to some more positive interpretation. But let's look in the mirror and say that this report is quite sobering. Okay, let's talk about headline number B2.
Many changes in the climate system become larger in direct relation to increasing global warming. They include increases in the frequency and intensity of hot extremes, marine heat waves and heavy precipitation, agricultural and ecological droughts in some regions, and proportions of intense tropical cyclones, as well as reductions in Arctic sea ice, snow cover, and permafrost.
All right. It seems to me that basically says the longer we wait, the worse things get, right? Many changes become larger. The bad things get worse in direct relation to how much we let the globe warm up.
Yeah. Like there's small things like they're big, but like the albedo effect, right? You know, when you have a white surface, it reflects heat and it keeps the planet, you know, safer from warming in a certain way. But as you start to have all that ice melting, it gets darker and the darkness absorbs more heat. And so, you know, you have this sort of, again, that sort of positive feedback mechanism that continues to make things worse. And, you know, we see things like the fires, you know, the fires are going to lead to further global warming too, right? So particulates are greenhouse gas. I don't think they're considered a greenhouse gas, but they're certainly a heat trapping element.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Let me skip to number B, headline B4. It says,
under scenarios with increasing CO2 emissions, the ocean and land carbon sinks are projected to be less effective at slowing the accumulation of CO2 in the atmosphere.
I mean, once we burn down all the forests, we chop down all of the Amazon,
carbon
right?
sinks,
and we load up all the carbon dioxide in the ocean. There's no place for the carbon dioxide from your gas tank to go, and everything gets worse. I mean, it's the ability of the Earth to take on and absorb this CO2 in a way that's consistent with us being here becomes less and less effective, right?
Yeah.
All right. And here's one. Here's a favorite. All right, let's hear it, and then you can comment about irreversibility for millennia. I think
many changes due to past and future greenhouse gas emissions are irreversible for centuries to millennia, especially changes in the ocean, ice sheets, and global sea level.
Yeah, right. I mean, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't put it back in, right? I mean, that's the big deal. I mean, I hope that we're going to figure out some way to draw these greenhouse gases down. But, you know, once you emit it, it's there. It's going to hang out for a very long time.
And the heating of the oceans it expresses itself over centuries to thousands of years. So now if the ocean heats up and expands, right, and the sea level rises, because just from the ocean being warmer, it's going to take tens of thousands of years for that water to cool off again.
Right? Yeah,
this is the irreversibility of it. I mean, you can't unboil the ocean. I mean, it's
go ahead.
No, I was just going to, I mean, if you melt the ice caps, right, they don't freeze the next year and come back. I mean, they're gone for thousands of years.
And I forever oceanologists just assumed we couldn't change the temperature of the ocean. I mean, I think when I don't remember when it was first discovered or who first discovered it, but when reports came in that the ocean had warmed, people didn't believe it. They were just like, nope, this is somebody's data is incorrect. Like, this is just not possible. But apparently it is possible.
Yes, indeed. So, let's do this. Let's put down, we've been through the A and the B headlines. There's still the C and the D headlines. Let us end this show here and begin with the second show where we talk about the remaining headlines from the IPCC. Does that make sense?
I think that's a good idea, Ted.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll put up a link to these headlines on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can read along with us. If you have questions about these things, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You can find us on any of the modern podcast distribution apps on your smartphone. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we close the way we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's a patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we must insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects disadvantaged communities, in order to safeguard our collective future. Samara, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.